Hello, everybody listening to futureprimitive.org. Today I am on the phone somewhere near Puerto Vallarta in Mexico with Rocky Caravelli. Rocky Caravelli is treatment facilitator at the Awakening in the Dream House, an innovative treatment and rehabilitation center in Mexico that uses ibogaine, an entheogenic alkaloid of the iboga plant, for both addiction therapy and psycho-spiritual exploration. I read about Rocky Caravelli's work in Shaman's Drum a couple of months ago and really wanted to get in touch with him because I feel that this work is very beautiful and very useful. So, Rocky, I'd like to begin by asking you, I suppose being a counselor in this way is very much about physician heal thyself or counselor heal thyself. So perhaps you'd like to speak a little bit about your healing journey to begin our interview.
Okay, well thank you, Joanna. And yeah, we do agree that this is a self-healing tool. My experience with the ibogaine was 5 years ago, 2003, on December 2nd. I was currently using several narcotic substances, methamphetamine, methadone, and heroin, and was hitting really bad spot. My father had also passed away from alcoholism at 43, and I was 39 at the time, and I was pretty certain that if I just kept on this path that I wasn't even going to make it to 43. My girlfriend and I went to the Rosarito Ibogaine Association, which I had found through a search on the internet and through a friend who wanted to take me to Amsterdam. Shortly after I'd read an article in Discover Magazine where they had found an alkaloid that would stop the withdrawal symptoms of opiate and also hit a reset in the mind's neuroreceptors that would help to control cravings. You know, and I was sitting there, you know, reading this after having a surgery and trying to get off of heroin using pharmaceuticals, which didn't work, and I realized that I was going to have to figure out something, and this suddenly showed up in my life, and so I made my way down to San Diego.
Now, Rosarito is in Baja California, right?
Yeah, so it was about 45 minutes from the border, going south on 101. They had a little house there with three bedrooms, and they did their treatments in a little clinical hospital where they did the monitoring and stuff. And it was still a little bit new on how to approach this treatment, and they just had the safety standards that which felt comfortable. I had no understanding whatsoever of what ibogaine was or where it came from or what its were in conditions.
Tell me, how come you trusted that this was the place you needed to go next, Rocky?
Well, it wasn't so much the location or the clinic at the time that I trusted. It was the medicine. There was something about how they described this work that just clicked. It was like just reading about what it does in the body, how it works, and you know how it heals you, because they didn't go into detail about anything about it as a healing medicine for other for other conditions.
Yes.
It just clicked inside. It was just like, that's going to work. That's going to work. I had absolute trust from the beginning of our first hearing about this type of treatment for drug dependency.
And you had a desire to become free from your dependencies.
Yeah, I've been working on 12 years of trying to break free with success. But it was always kind of like I was treating a condition that where you would stop using, I would stop using, but my mind had never stopped thinking about using, I guess the best way to put it. There's some kind of embedded relationship there with me and narcotics that would not quiet down, even after long, 3 years, 4 years of not using substances, and it would still be there.
Right.
I tried everything else. I really did. I mean, I've been through several rehabs, jails, institutions, baptisms, every kind of bipolar medication, depression medications, lived out in the woods alone for 3 years. I mean, tried all kinds of different methods.
Yeah, I understand, Rocky. I really understand. So tell me, so you arrived to have a relationship with this special alkaloid in order to become free, and then what happened?
Well, I didn't realize I was going to end up having a relationship with this alkaloid.
Okay.
that's what ended up happening, but... when I arrived down there, I was pretty weathered. I was very sick. By the time we started to do treatment, I hadn't had any methadone for a couple of days. And I hadn't had any more methamphetamine. So I was really exhausted and tired, and luckily I was strong.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into this process at 2 p.m., and I was administered the first dose of the ibogaine.
Mm-hmm.
And within about 45 minutes, I started having my first introduction of dreams and met a very interesting tree spirit that came from the branch of a tree, like a orb of light, came down and got in my face and opened its jaws. It was almost like just pure energetic force.
Uh-huh.
Blew through me, screamed at me, just roared into my body,
uh-huh.
And my whole body felt it move through it,
uh-huh.
As if like a wind blowing through you, and I could feel the spirits move out of my back,
uh-huh.
The opiate spirit, amphetamine spirit. I didn't really completely understand what was happening at the moment. I was a little bit irritated by this character's forwardness.
Uh-huh.
But my very first comment to it was, I'm not afraid of you. I know you. I've met you before. And I said it out loud, laying on the bed.
Uh-huh.
And I just knew it. I knew who this spirit was. I knew this spirit. I knew what it was doing on some level, and was completely comfortable and relaxed. In other words, I was definitely intimidated by its presence, but also realized that it's working with me, and I know who you are. I understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And it did it several times. It probably did it 10 times. It did this whole, kind of ritualistic, ceremonial growing of the branch and then coming up and getting in my face. And then after that was done, I probably dreamed for about 30 minutes with these in experiences, and then I felt a hand move up through my body, starting in my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the second dose kicking in. They only had a two-dose protocol at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's traditional that it comes with the energy, and I felt the hand move up through my body, wrap its fingers around my brain, and I remember saying to myself, again out loud, I'm going to let the medicine heal me.
Yes.
And rolled over. My face never hit the pillow before I was unconscious.
Okay.
And that was that. That was my treatment.
Wow.
I woke up 4 hours later. They woke me up and transported me back to the other house, which is kind of hard to believe at this time after working with people and realizing that living around on Ibogaine is not very comfortable.
Right. yes, yes.
And slept the rest of the night, which was remarkable too. So I woke up the next morning and felt, you know, wiped out, but not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Went out in the kitchen and made a cup of coffee. And I hadn't had any coffee in a while. And I normally drink it with cream and sugar, and I only wanted it black.
Mm-hmm.
I made a bowl of cereal. Normally have, like, sugar and Fruit Loops, but then all kinds of crap.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't want sugar.
You didn't want sugar.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of amazing to me. I was like, I don't want sugar. I want black coffee. And then I said, my teeth had stopped aching. I mean, my teeth had been aching. Methadone and methamphetamine just really rot your teeth. You know?
Yeah.
My teeth had stopped hurting. And I was just kind of dumbfounded at this whole, like, transition at nighttime. Like my appetite, the frequency I've been living on, the sugars and carbs, and all these things had just shifted suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
I basically took off my clothes and went and laid in the sun for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sheet out in the house. All I wanted to do was lay on the ground in the sun. Now, my body was still aching in my joints from the methadone, but I wasn't in withdrawals.
You weren't in withdrawals. That's very important, because I would like part of this interview, I would like very deeply if we could be of service in some way. So if we are speaking to anybody out there who wants to be free, you were not having severe withdrawal symptoms.
No, it really worked.
Okay.
And, it took some time to get strength back and these other kind of things, and there was a lot of confusion, and a huge shift had been made. I mean, when you're cruising down the highway at 60 miles an hour, and then you cut loose on a little dirt road somewhere and start making that the new path of your life, it's like it takes some adjusting, you know? I mean, you're just bombarding down this freeway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's basically got a big cement wall at the end of it, and somehow you found a little trail off, you know? And the trail gets bigger and bigger and bigger as time wears on, but it's just a little trail to begin with, and
right. That's
pretty overwhelming. I mean, you realize everything in your life was constructed around this habit or this lifestyle,
yeah.
And suddenly it's gone. And
Yeah.
More than just a culture shock, it's a reality shock.
You said you were ready to change lanes, and so you changed lanes so amazingly that you had encounters that led you to decide that you wanted to help people in the same way as you had been helped.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious this was a problem. I mean, it was like, you know, here we are. We've tried everything else, and you finally found an answer. You want to take it to everyone you know. And so I volunteered down there for a couple of months, and then they put me on staff. And I stayed down in Tijuana for about 9 months and worked with about 70 people, and I include myself in that.
Right.
And took them through the process, you know, working with this tool under the supervision of Martin Polanco and Randy Hank and the other supervisor there, and another doctor, Dr. Duquenyes, and started to learn a little bit about administering the medicine. And I was already pretty skilled at working with people from experience in 12-step programs for years in the first stages of recovery, plus I'd had so much experience of my own.
Okay.
That first 3 days, the first week, the first month. So it's pretty natural. It was like, it wasn't like I was trying to figure things out. It was just there.
Yes, yes. how did you see, like, those first 70 people, including yourself, how did you see the plant spirit of Africa working through them? Can you give me some pointers, maybe, that some unifying pointers that happened to people?
Well, I saw a lot of people receive healings, and I also saw some of the limitations of what we were providing. There were some elements of preparation and also some elements of allowing enough time to pass after the treatment for people to regain their strength.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw some tremendous, tremendous miracles overnight, you know, where people were basically having the same experience in their life as I was having and were retrieved. So it was a really good experience, you know. I think at the time, you know, from my overview, I'd say about half the people really got what they'd come looking for, and the other half just didn't get enough support prior and after. So it started helping me to read my mind what would be better conditions for doing this work.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I used to see images in my mind of people doing treatments. I got really blessed from having the treatment I had because although I was unconscious during the primary aspect of it, whenever anybody else would speak of their visions, I could see them in my mind and very, very clearly.
Amazing.
So I would get a lot of images when people would share with me what was going on and a real sense of direct connection to their psyche or their inner self. And I had several clients that came down and wanted to stay on and do the same thing that I was doing and work with me. There was a young woman, Beth, who a real sweetheart, you know, and I could see from in the dream, you know, her old appliances falling off of her. I could see her walking down the street with like a refrigerator like falling over and a washer with a lid broken off and toasters and, you know, it's like all these appliances of her life were literally falling. She's walking down the road, you know, walking away from it all. And you know, it's like lightening the load of your psyche and your past and your memory. And I got to see that quite often with people in those first 3 days after their treatment. People didn't stay much more after 3 days after their treatment. So they were just getting started. So I know I missed out a lot by not having enough time with them.
I want to say, while we're talking about this, that you have a page on YouTube, and so listeners can go to Awakening in the Dream at YouTube and can see some people speaking about their experience.
Yeah.
And also you have a website which is called awakeninginthedream.com. So, this plant, how is it administered? Powder, tea, what is it?
It comes as a white powder. It's manufactured in Europe. There's an extractor that we've been working with for 15 years. We design the dosages of ibogaine of how many milligrams of ibogaine per kilogram of body weight.
Okay.
A normal opiate detox is anywhere from 17 milligrams per kilo to 24 milligrams per kilo in the first 24 hours.
Yes.
Of course, there's some exceptions in the effectiveness of the ibogaine. So you can't just say, oh, I'm going to give this person this much medicine and it's going to work for this addiction, because in some cases people have a high sensitivity to the ibogaine and it works super effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want to give somebody too much ibogaine, because then it's a very confusing experience and very difficult to recover from. Other people have, like, really big habits and really, you know, their bodies metabolize the medicine really fast, and so we'll need to use more. So there's a standardized safety standard of measurement for the weight of the ibogaine per person, and there's individual themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things have to be taken into consideration. I mean, somebody who's doing, like, a psycho-spiritual experience is going to use like half as much medicine somebody, as somebody that's doing an addiction therapy for opiate and somebody who's addicted to crack cocaine or methamphetamine is completely different, and we break it up over several days. So we may on Monday and then wait 2 days and do another treatment on Wednesday and wait 4 days and do another treatment on, like, Saturday. So.
How does the person feel in between two treatments? So can you generalize?
Well, when we work with alcohol and cocaine and methamphetamine, where we don't have an actual physical withdrawal symptoms that we're dealing with, we normally stabilize people for 2 days prior to the treatment.
Right.
What we're really trying to do is work with the ibogaine's metabolite. When ibogaine goes through the body, it breaks down into a metabolite known as noribogaine. This is actually what is saved by the body. The body does not reject ibogaine. It doesn't consider it a toxin. So it actually absorbs into the system and stays in the system for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So with people with alcohol and stimulants, what we're trying to do is really build up the level of the noribogaine, because that's where the state of well-being comes from and the longevity and the loss of cravings. We've really become successful in these treatments where, as before, they were just doing single administering, you know, one-night dosages. And we've learned that if we start slow, the body metabolizes the ibogaine, and then they also start to get some relief right away. And it also allows time for them to prepare for the flood dose treatment. That's what we call it, is a flood dose. Anytime we do more than 7 milligrams per kilo, we consider it a flood dose to the system.
Uh-huh.
And this is a necessity in the treatment, that we need to have at some point an override with the ibogaine over the existing substances in the body.
Wow, that's fascinating. So does the person go into a dream state? Could you qualify it somewhat like that?
Now, ibogaine isn't really a psychedelic. Ibogaine is an oniphrenic or wonophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a dream creator.
Uh-huh.
So most of the experience is with the eyes closed and within the inside of the mind, kind of like a dream, like a movie screen.
Mm-hmm.
Very vivid in some cases and very three-dimensional and very very intricate in its revealing itself. But when you open your eyes, it may be similar to a small dose of psilocybin, where there's energy in a room.
Okay.
And you can see orbs of energy, and you see energy around people and auras. But really, the experience is with the eyes closed. And in fact, it's very uncomfortable to keep your eyes open.
Uh-huh. Yes. I have to share something with you that, to me, is really wonderful. The first day I spoke to you, which was about a week ago, at night, when I was sleeping, I had a dream that I was interpreting to people what a branch was saying to me. And then at the beginning of our interview, you told me that in your first experience, this branch appeared to you reoccurringly. So my question would be, do you feel that ibogaine might restore us to our connection to the earth?
Well, definitely, ibogaine is a root, and it's a root by nature, and it expresses itself as a root. And of course, a root is under the surface of the planet. We don't quite have the comprehension of what that would be to have our feet literally attached to the root. Where, in other words, our information is coming from the inside of the earth out, where other plants gather a lot of information from the sun and from the stars, like the ayahuasca vine in is a good example, how it twists and moves forward and high.
Uh-huh.
Boga is going deep down into the center of the mother.
Yes.
So there's a very grounded experience. In fact, one of the very first onsets of the ibogaine experience is this gravity. This, all of a sudden, it's like somebody turned the dial on the gravity, and you can feel yourself being pulled to the base of the bed.
Mm.
Some people even feel as if they've been being pushed down onto the bed. So it represents itself and expresses itself in this way. And the teachings are very organic about creation, the beginning of man,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of language, communication. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced that this is the route that raised the consciousness of human beings into learning to work with vocabulary music.
Wow. Daniel Pinchbeck says something that attracted my attention about his experience with Iboga. He spoke about the fact that it might electrically reconnect the right and the left brain. And then I read a book on abuse, on child abuse, which spoke about the fact that when a child is abused, severely abused, the connection between the right and the left brain might be interrupted. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, one of the main interpretations that I see with people, this is where I see how I can heal people, whether it's for depression or, you know, heavy heroin or OxyContin abuses.
Exactly.
The single common thread in all of this is, from my interpretation and my observations,
yes.
is that at some point we separate ourselves, all right? There's something that takes place in our earlier years. It may not even be from a specific trauma,
yes.
but just a sense of unsafety in our social encounters with other human beings.
Uh-huh.
We create a buffer or space.
Yes.
And in that space, something else is going to appear. Something is going to take the vacancy.
Mm.
I think that's where all of this probably, like you said, has something to do with the left and right hemisphere.
Yes. And would Ibogaine perhaps help reconnect those two hemispheres?
Well, I believe so. I believe what it's doing is it's bringing us back into our bodies
mm-hmm.
to a state of presence where we hadn't been present before.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Now, speak to me about your personal journey, Rocky, and both in a spatial sense, which is how you came to work where you are, and how you came to collaborate in providing a better environment for people to have this experience after you left Baja, California.
Well, for the first 8 months after I left Baja, I had just done my second treatment right before I left,
mm-hmm.
came to Portland. I spent 8 months in Portland really purifying myself
mm-hmm.
and metabolizing all the experiences of the first 70 people. I had never done any kind of work like that, so it was a pretty overwhelming experience and took time to integrate it and look at everything that had happened. After that 8 months, I did my third experience with somebody who had been initiated in Gabon.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience was like the permissionary note to move forward into my next phase of life. Up until then, I was still laying floors, doing linoleum and carpet, and was really discontent with the fact that this isn't what I want to be doing, but I hadn't made the decision to go back to working with the Ibogaine yet.
Right, right.
After that last treatment, we started doing work in the underground.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to develop a whole new education about working one-on-one with people, and started realizing that these conditions aren't optimum either.
Uh-huh.
So I had the Tijuana experience of the Ibogaine Association and the observation of their protocol. Then I did the work in the United States for a year and a half and realized the limitations on those protocols and really realized if I was going to do this, that I had to do it right, and I needed to find a home for the Iboga, that it has to be his home, that this healing center is, I guess, more or less like a temple.
Temple.
Only the work done in this location for this spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started asking where.
Right.
All right, where do you want to be?
Yeah.
What it told me was is it wanted warm tropical waters.
Yeah.
Insect sounds at night. It wanted banana trees.
Uh-huh.
And, it just was really specific.
Specific.
Wanted easy access for people to get to it.
Yes, of
So I ended up in Sayulita 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm not really sure. I've never been here before. Well, I've never been here before.
Yes.
Within about 10 days, people were wanting to come. We thought we'd be here for 4 months and set up and find a house. It was almost instantaneous. It's like it just wanted to be here, and yeah. It made it really easy on us.
Right. It's a practical spirit, in other words.
And those elements, those simple elements, are so key. You know, the sounds of the insects at night and the frogs, the thunderstorms that come. You know, being able to use the warm ocean, mm-hmm. you know, for healing.
Yes.
You know, just the coconuts. Coconuts are like the most awesome food in the morning after treatment. It's a complete food for electrolytes and cooling the system.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the right set and setting to me, like Timothy Leary used to say.
Yeah, no, that's for certain. And mm-hmm. we love it here. I mean,
yeah. So let's do a little practical recommendation here. If somebody wants to come so that they can begin to be free, where would they call you or how would they get in touch with you?
My landline phone is 503-922-1089. And then I can always be reached at rocky@awakeninginthedream.com.
Uh-huh.
And that's my website.
Yeah.
The first piece of information that we need is an online application filled out, so I can get an interpretation of the profile, what the intentions for healing are, what the current status is, if they are using or not, or if they're drinking or not.
Sure.
Health, age, all this information is very, very important, and that's so we can at least begin the first phase of interviews. After the first phase of interviews, we'll send a packet so that people can have it's mandatory to have an EKG and a blood panel to see how the cardiovascular system is doing.
Right.
And make sure that the body has a stability in that area.
Does age make a difference?
Age does make a difference. The recovery rates change every 10 years. So from 15 to 25, 25 to 35, 35 to 45, 45 to 55, 55 to 65. Each of those 10 years has different aspects on how they'll be able to metabolize the ibogaine. I mean, a 25-year-old will be up and walking around. A 45-year-old, you need help to the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
A 65-year-old, and, you know, it takes an extra day.
Uh-huh.
It's just common, you know.
Yeah. So you're receiving people down there.
3 people a week.
Great. Rocky.
Yeah.
Who are you today after doing these years of work with people and with the medicine? Tell us about you and what it's doing for you.
That's a good question. You know, I think I know myself today. I think I found my dharma, my purpose, my reason.
Mm-hmm.
I got to thank the spirit for giving me a reason to live. Who I am today is kind of just a guide, a roadmap, a couple months ahead of somebody else in a process of growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that I've bridged the gap to my next purpose. I challenged the fears and I challenged the limitations that were from an old life.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I really do believe that I broke the chains of addiction in my family's genealogy and history, that my children will not have to suffer the same path.
Wow.
This is a thing that I'd like to see often when I can, and I think that's why I'm here, is to allow people that same opportunity to fully move from the old self and be born into the new self that we were really originally asked to come and do and be here for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's something so sacred about participating in that with somebody else. It's true intimacy. These are the things that you described to me that are valuable in your life, and it is the most important and valuable thing in my life. Is the relationships in my life today are a genuine, heartfelt, sincere, and clear, and honest relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Much different than where I came from.
Yes, I understand that. Yes.
And it And it's not just surrounding myself with people of that same stature, but that I actually am showing up as a member in that same kind of group on a level of closeness and intimacy where it's a sincerity. It's such a freedom, because what it does is it allows people to completely be whatever and whoever and wherever they are in their lives. And it's not a stress on my personal life that you come in a stuck spot. In fact, I embrace it because I know that the more stuck you are, the closer you are to crossing to the other side.
Beautiful.
So I'm highly motivated to be in this arena of work because, you know, the more that we go through, the more opportunity we have to switch over. I mean, all we're really doing here with this medicine is we're trading dark energy for light energy. The medicines that people come here on, which were once medicines and now become addictions, served people for a long period of time beforehand, and they just lost their usefulness. And we're not taking anything away from anybody. All we're doing is exchanging frequencies from fear to love.
Yeah.
And these are basic principles, and I get to live by these today, which is really, really good. It's really good for me.
Yeah, I hear that. On your YouTube piece, you talk about the fact that you like Tom Robbins' books. What is it about Tom Robbins' books that you like? I love Tom Robbins.
Well, Jitterbug Perfume is one of my favorite books.
It's my favorite book.
it's yours too? Oh.
Yes. So is it the Traveling Through Time?
Yeah, Traveling Through Time. And, of course, a really good love affair.
Yes.
And that love can actually bridge time itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole thing about smells. I'm a sniffer, man. I got a sniffer thing. I'm a big Italian nose on my face, right? So, you know, I love the whole thing about, you know, the perfume and finding the secret. And I love beets. And so, I mean, he covered it all for me in there. I mean.
Great.
You know, and Seattle. I mean, you know, it's the Pacific Northwest. I mean, it's, I love bouncing through time in that book. And it's my daughter's favorite book, too.
Great, I get you. Rocky, I think that soon we're going to bring this conversation around, and I'd like you to go deep in your heart and say some words to the people who would be shy and who would be stuck. I know you just said something very beautiful, that the more you're stuck, the closer you are to opening the door. But bring us around with some words to the people who would come to you or who are just out there.
Okay. Well, the real truth is, I think, for what I've seen with people is when you've really run out of the egoic mind's choices for change,
mm-hmm.
you really are convinced that your mind actually isn't providing you with good choices for change, that it is not hopeless, that the spirit in all of us is extremely strong. And, you know, I see a lot of people who have tried everything, and it's almost traumatizing to reach for hope again. It's almost easier to stay stuck. It's almost easier to just not respond. And I just would like to really, you know, to offer, you know, just my experience. That's all I can really offer is my experience of knowing what that place is, and actually really being convinced, you know, I'm broken and there's no fixing me.
Mm-hmm.
But there really, really is. There really, really is. And it's not easy. This is not easy. That's for darn sure. Nothing about this process is easy from mm-hmm. beginning to end and onward. That change and development and evolution and growth, but to give into it and to give into the game or to give into the egoic mind's limitations is really not that hard to shift out of once you have trust and hope. And there's so many different paths for this to achieve itself, but it really has to be at that spot, I guess. I would just encourage people to always keep going back to the center. You know, the Iboga says over and over and over, from the heart, not from the mind, from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to once again live from the heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you so much, Rocky Caravelli. And I want to remind everybody that the website is awakeningindhedream.com. And thank you with all my heart. We will meet again soon.